We will have a tape today, and that tape will be given by Mr. Armstrong. It will be the sermon tape for today, the main message. It is, however, unfortunately not complete. How much of the beginning I'm not really quite sure that we've missed, but we've got about 55 minutes of it. I think it's the heart and core and the crux of the topic. But it is entitled that the Church is a New Civilization, and it was given back in 1982. I think he actually spoke on the same subject at the feast there, but this is given in, I think it was June 82, and the only reason I know that is because he actually mentions that he will be 90 in a month, the following month, so that would be in July in 82. So we will have that today, but what I thought I'd do in the news analysis today is I would take something that he mentions and, if you like, expand on it using the news that we find in the papers that we've got in 2008, because he does mention about, in the connection with the new civilization that will be in the future, that the civilization that we have today relies very, very much on benefactors. And he talks about the way and the approach, he just very, very briefly touches on it, and the way and approach of the benefactor within today's society and today's governments. And I thought that it might be particularly pertinent, because what we've got today, what we actually have found today, when you're looking at the newspapers in the past few weeks, is a situation which really illustrates this probably better than anything I've ever seen, and that is the situation over in Burma. When you look at what has happened in Burma, here's a from the Telegraph, from Thursday, May the 8th, it says 100,000 may be dead as the Burmese fight to stay alive with little aid. It says the number of dead in Burma's cyclone disaster could climb to more than 100,000, it was claimed last night, and as survivors battle to stay alive with little relief in sight, 5 days after the cyclone Nargis struck, the US ambassador in Rangoon issued a new estimate of the scale of the human cost in the disaster. The information that we're receiving indicates that there may well be over 100,000 deaths in the Delta area, says Sherry Villarosa, I think it is, the US Chargé d'Affaires. So that was back on Thursday, May the 8th, so that was some time ago. And since that time, it has developed, and we've seen the entire tragedy really develop. And this is coming from Friday, May the 9th, the following day. It says the UN chief warns of a greater tragedy as the Burma junta blocks the aid effort. And the United States humanitarian chief accused Burma's ruling military junta yesterday of doing nothing like as much as is needed to bring aid to 1.5 million people left homeless by Cyclone Nargis, which devastated parts of the country. John Holmes said that the situation was increasingly desperate. There was real danger that an even worse tragedy unfold if we can't get aid there that's desperately needed in quickly. Even as the first four UN aid flights arrived in Rangoon, the former capital, delivering supplies including high-energy biscuits, officials grew increasingly frustrated at the junta's refusal to grant visas to specialist relief workers. What the junta basically wanted to happen was that the aid that as it came in would then be given to them, and they would then distribute it, because they were the benefactors. And that's just to remind ourselves what Christ actually said over in Luke 22. Just turn over to Luke 22. Because, as I say, this, I think, probably more than almost any single thing we have seen in recent times, illustrates this principle and the way in which this works and what Christ was actually saying. And it said in verse 24, and there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. So it's all to do with who is going to be the top dog, who is going to be the greatest amongst them. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority, so they are going to be the greatest, they want to be the top dog, they that want to be in those positions of authority, are called benefactors. So they are looked upon by the people that they're ruling as benefactors, and because of that they allow them to continue to rule. But he says, it shall not be so amongst you, but he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief as him that does serve, who is greater than he that sits at meat or him that serves. And he then showed that he was the one amongst them that served, actually went down round and washed the very feet of the disciples at that particular time. But This article is showing that the greater tragedy is that the Burmese junta are wanting to hold on to the power and authority that they have, and they're wanting to hold on to it specifically so that they can be seen as the benefactor. They can be seen as the one who, in fact, is dealing out the aid to the people. From Saturday, May the 10th, that's last week, it says the UN launches appeal as Burma keeps out aid. It says the United Nations yesterday launched a £96 million appeal to help the victims of the cyclone in Burma, despite there being no sign from the country's regime that it would allow foreign agencies to distribute the aid. Now, the problem is with the agencies like Oxfam and others is that the money is given to them to specifically get the aid that is given to the people on the ground. And the problem, and they found this in no uncertain terms in the past, that if they give it to government agencies, all of a sudden, 90% of it vanishes. Now, we have found this ourselves as we tried to pass money. I remember one particular case where we tried to pass money down to an individual down in Nigeria. And we thought, well, we'll do it quickly. We'll send it via the banks. And we sent it via the banks. And by the time it actually arrived with him, it was 7 months late. It was 7 months in actually going down, by which time the best part, I think it was about 45% of it had disappeared. And that was going through the banking system, going through an official system. So we are up against this all the time. If ever we want to help anybody, we are up against this all the time, trying to get the aid in. So you can understand the aid agencies refusing to go ahead and put the aid into the hands of the Burmese junta, because they know what will happen to it. And he goes on, it says, however, the announcement came a day after frustration of the regime's continual refusal to allow the foreign aid workers to operate in Burma, and its seizure of overseas food aid meant for the cyclone victims. They actually would take whatever was being flown in, and they, who knows where it went. The first two plane loads sent by the UN's World Food Programme, the WFP, were impounded at Rangoon Airport, in which what was described as an unprecedented show of indifference by the junta to its people. The authorities also deported a Qatari search and rescue team because they insisted on handling the relief effort themselves. The UN said the current difficulties surrounding access to the affected areas, the difficulties in bringing further relief supplies and expertise into the country, are casting a shadow over all the planning. And last night, the United States and the WFP vowed to continue to send shipments as they tried to negotiate over the 38 tons of high-energy biscuits, enough to feed 95,000 people and the other supplies which were still in the airport last night. And on it goes in that particular article, as it describes. Then, here's on Monday, May the 12th, a glimmer of hope after Burma's lets the Red Cross start moving the aid. And the glimmer of hope of the Burma cyclone survivors came yesterday after the Red Cross had been allowed to begin distributing aid. And as the country's military regime came under renewed attack from the international community for its resistance of outside help, the international community of the Red Cross said that it had unloaded a cargo plane carrying 35 tons in aid in Rangoon yesterday, and the government then allowed it to transfer the goods to its local employees and the Burmese Red Cross. So that was the first almost sign of a thaw when they realised that they simply couldn't deal with the situation. Another one, this is a commentary from the Telegraph. This is Monday, May the 12th. This is last Monday's. It says, we accept that the natural disasters sometimes happen. All the major religions teach a measure of acquiescence, even fatalism, in the face of a cataclysm. But when the disaster is man-made, we become angry. The Burmese junta didn't cause the floods that have devastated the country, but the obduracy of these small men in turning a disaster into a tragedy. More than 1 million Burmese may die needlessly, victims of the pettiness, xenophobia and stupidity of generals who have never fought a war. No country, not the mightiest in the world, has the resources to cope with a sudden catastrophe. When floods devastated New Orleans in the world's wealthiest nation, neighbours sent aid, understanding that a single government will not have all the necessary supplies in store. It makes sense. It makes sense to do that. And Burma is no United States. It's a poor country, made poorer by its leaders, and they fear and resent the West, and indeed the United Nations, which has repeatedly condemned them through their repression. But they have cordial enough relations with their chief neighbours, China, India, Thailand and Indonesia, and these states made swift, generous offers of relief, and a certain amount of their aid has been accepted. But the quartet could and should do more to use their influence to pressurise the junta into allowing foreign aid workers into the country. Tyrants the world over present themselves as protectors of a people under siege. And that is exactly what happens. They are protectors of a people under siege. Turn back with me to Genesis, Genesis chapter 10, and realize the if you like, the center of this and the way in which it all started, as far as the Bible is concerned, the indication that we see within Scripture, and who in fact was the instrument of this. In Genesis 10, notice over in verse 8, it says, "And Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth." So here was the ones who was the greatest. He became the greatest in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Eternal. In other words, here was the greatest one, which was the Eternal. It gives us absolutely everything that we have, our breath and our food and everything. But he then put himself ahead of God. And putting himself ahead of God, he became their benefactor. That was what in fact happened. He was a mighty hunter before the Eternal. Therefore it said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Eternal. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. And Babylon is what is designated as the system, and the very particularly the religious system, that will be there at the end time, against which Christ will actually fight. And if you want any proof as far as what happens to the aid once it actually does get through, if the Burmese officials have it, then here's one from Tuesday, May the 13th. It says, the Burmese officials are seizing emergency aid and selling it for profit. Now, as if they need it. It's not as if they actually need it, as the actual ruling, party. It's not really a party, it's a junta, it is a military rulership. The reason why they've been able to stay in there for 20-something years is because they have access to gas fields off the Burmese coast. And they have basically requisitioned the money that flows from those gas fields, and that then funds them. They do not need the vote of the people at all to stay in power, because they have an income which is the greater than anything else which is in the country, and they are therefore able to stay in power. And that, in fact, and add on to that that they held a referendum to pass through new laws that would allow them to stay in power again for a generation. And that, in the middle of all this cyclone disaster, they went ahead with a referendum to allow themselves to stay in power. And again, you see the mindset. Which direction is the mindset going? It is purely incoming. It is entirely an incoming mindset, trying to, again, be the benefactor. Not for the good of the people. They're not being beneficial for the people underneath them. They are giving the impression of that. They are the mighty hunter before the Eternal. They're the ones then providing for the people underneath them. And they therefore allow the acquiescence of the people. But this is what Christ was saying. Look, it must never be among you. And this is what Mr. Armstrong is going to bring out in the tape today. And they are not alone. They are not the only ones where this basic mentality exists. Here's another paper, another article. Here's from Friday, May the 9th. It says, 40,000 farm workers in Zimbabwe are forced to flee. Now, Zimbabwe provided food for the entire area around in the South African area. And they were able to, Rhodesia. Rhodesia provided food. That's where the food came from. And the Rhodesian industry then passed on to the Zimbabwe government, and they then carried on feeding the area and making money from that source. But it says around 40,000 Zimbabwean farm workers have had to flee as a result of the violence inflicted by Robert Mugabe's mobs. Since the country's general election in March, a union leader said yesterday, farm workers whose livelihoods have been destroyed since Mr. Mugabe began his assault on the white-owned land in 2000 are often supporters of the opposition movement of the Democratic Change. So in other words, he is attacking those workers that are working the land, and the country is starving. But he wants to make sure that the only the ones that they look as the benefactors are the ones that then will keep him in power. And again, you see the mindset. The mindset is not outgoing beneficiaries, people that are benefacting people underneath. They are wanting to be seen as benefactors, and only seen as benefactors, because they're wanting to have the incoming power going to themselves. Here's another one. Poverty-Stricken Tonga. Now, this is coming from Friday, May the 9th. Poverty-Stricken Tonga King throws a £2 million party. So he spends £2 million on a party. Says the new king of Tonga, one of the world's poorest nations, has announced plans for a lavish coronation party, inviting a clutch of celebrities, including Sir Elton John. George Tupou V, who has angered his subjects with his extravagance, plans to spend an estimated £2 million on celebrating his accession to the throne of the Pacific's last monarchy. The king, who is 60, assumed the title in 2006 from his late father, who was famous for being the world's portliest monarch. But his coronation had to be postponed after pro-democracy demonstrators rioted and burned down much of the capital. But now Sir Elton, the Duke and Duchess of Gloucestershire, the Prince Albert and Monaco are among those being invited to what royal aides describe as, quote, the most magnificent event for the Pacific area in decades. Now, it's not wrong to have a party in that sense, and I wouldn't say to invite dignitaries, but it says a spokesman for Sir Elton John said that he would be performing at a Las Vegas at the time, but New Zealand said that the sum being spent was more than a third of the aid money that it gives to Tonga each year. So again, what we need to make sure we understand is that when we see this phrase of benefactor, it is not something which is giving to the people under these rulers. It is being looked upon as being beneficiaries, being looked upon as the ones doing the giving, so that they have the acquiescence of the people that are under them. But the direction is always incoming. The direction is inevitably incoming. Now, the difficulty is that we in the West, or let's put it this way, we in Israelite countries, of particularly Ephraim and Manasseh, in other words, Britain and Britain, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and also the United States, we have lived under a system which has had a basis within Scripture. And many of the laws that have been written into our constitution, in the case of America, or in the case of Britain, into our history, because we don't have a constitution over here. It is a series of laws that go back many thousands of years into history. But they have been founded on Scripture, on particularly the Hebrew Scriptures, obviously. And when we find today, however, when we find in the newspapers, is that it's so often we are being lied to. Things are being twisted. No longer is it the straight and narrow. No longer are we going down that straight and narrow, which is based on the historical biblical perspective or the constitutional biblical perspective either. And this is something that we see continually within the newspapers, and it reflects this beneficiary, not beneficiary in the good sense, but benefactor in the bad sense, mentality that is creeping into our societies as well, that is coming from the same Gentile mindset, or carnal, let's put it this way, it's coming from a carnal mindset that has not had the influence and the impact of the Scriptures. Here, let me just give you just a few examples. Here is one. It says, alcohol ban on adults with a child at Tesco's checkouts. And it says, Tesco is refusing to sell alcohol to parents shopping with their children under rules designed to tackle underage drinking. The supermarket has told cashiers not to supply alcohol if they suspect that an adult would be buying the drink for an underage youth. And staff have been told to err on the side of caution when interpreting the policy, leading to cases of parents out with their shopping with their children being told to put alcohol back on the shelves. Now, it's a parent's job to monitor and regulate their children. But again, there is a certain mindset. Again, when you look at Scripture, children should be learnt to approach alcohol in a proper way within the home. And the only way they can do that is to see their adult parents and grandparents to also approach alcohol in the proper way within the home. So it's essential that we do give the right example. But it's the parents' job. It's not the job of a supermarket misapplying and being dictatorial. Again, what's happening is these laws are coming in. They're imposing their will by force in many cases, and this is just one area that we can see. Another one, try again. Anti-terror law used to snoop on fishermen. A council has that used anti-terrorism powers to check whether a child lived within a school's catchment area has used the same law now to spy on fishermen. So they pass a law that is for anti-terrorism purposes, and they put it forward as if it's anti-terrorism purposes, but the real purpose is, again, the benefactor. The benefactor isn't, the direction isn't down to the people, it is back from them. It is having the acquiescence of the people, making sure that they behave themselves or are under their thumb. Poole Council used a covert surveillance team to gather evidence of shellfish allegedly being illegally gathered in the Poole Harbour, Dorset. The snooping was carried out under the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which is intended for use in the fight against crime and terrorism, but which has been used by some councils to clamp down on such minor offences as even dog fouling. So they will use terrorism legislation. Once it goes on the statute book, then it's in there. And they will use that in whatever way they deem that it would be necessary. Another one. Occasionally, what you'll find is that people will go ahead and will not just object, but will fight against the kind of imposition of the rules from the government. Here is one that comes through from Channel 4, wins a payout over Muslim, quote, preachers of hate. It says, police and prosecutors have paid out a six-figure sum for wrongly claiming a television expose of Islamic extremists was faked. Now, this basically was an accusation against the television company. The Crown Prosecution Service and the West Midlands Police will apologise, quote, unreservedly, unquote, at a High Court hearing today for libelling Channel 4's dispatches programme called Undercover Mosque. Legal sources said that they will pay £50,000 damages and £50,000 costs for falsely claiming that the documentary was misleading, quote, and would stir up racial hatred. Now, the thing is, the costs notice was £50,000. Had that been anyone that could not go ahead and take them to court and take them through the entire legal procedures, then the police would have gone ahead and had the acquiescence of the public, or would have had the acquiescence of whoever was there, whoever they were going against. And you see so many things. Here is something, I don't know what paper this is from, I failed to clip it out, but it was in the last 2 weeks. It says, global warming to stop for 10 years. That's very, very handy. But they are saying global warming will stop for at least until 2015 because of natural variations in the climate, scientists claimed yesterday. In other words, they are now seeing their figures, which are then rebounding and going the other direction. They think, oh, we've got a temporary halt. And we've got just stopping for a moment and then we'll carry on again. How do they know? How can they possibly know? But because they have a dogma, therefore, and they have all kinds of taxation purposes, like anybody who's driving a certain size of car, the price of petrol going up, the taxation that comes in off that petrol, and all the other green taxes that they have, they will go ahead and extract more and more money on them, giving them a political base to work from. They will go ahead and come up with something like this, which is global warming is, it's just going to kind of have a pause for 10 years. Because the figures go against it. Another one, right next door to it, right in the paper, it says, and right in the front page, it says, worst of the credit crunch may be over, says the bank. It says, the worst of the credit crisis may be over, and markets could soon be on the road to recovery, says the Bank of England, its financial stability report today. And on it goes. And again, and when you look at the underlying problem, and that is that they've printed too much money for the assets and everything else that is there, how can it possibly be over? It just simply isn't over. And yet, what you can actually see is this, quite frankly, we're being lied to so many, many times. Here's an article where it talks about the ID cards. Now, the ID cards is an idea that the identity card within the UK that the government has tried to bring in for some time. But it's kind of been shelled because there's been such a backlash against it. And always they're saying, look, it's to do anti-terrorism. We need to have the ID card to combat terrorism. It says almost unnoticed last week, the government announced that it had shaved another £1 billion off the cost of its proposed identity card scheme. It did so by deciding to let the, quote, open market, unquote, capture citizens' biometrics, effectively outsourcing the cost of enrolling people onto the ID database. You could end up getting your fingerprints taken at the supermarket rather than the passport office as originally proposed. And if you see what has actually happened, data that has gone walkabouts from various government departments and outside as well, what in fact is going to happen in such situations like this? It says, almost imperceptibly, the security architecture originally built around the ID card project has been dismantled. When it was proposed in 2002, the intention was to establish a bespoke database, and it goes on, it says, but this idea was abandoned. Instead, biometrics will be stored on an existing system in the Home Office used for asylum seekers. So they're going to try and adapt other systems to cope. It says it's also envisaged that everyone would have to give an iris print, which is the most secure biometric, with a far lower chance of false reading than the fingerprints. But last year, however, the Identity and Passport Agency said it would proceed only with fingerprints, which are far cheaper to capture. And it then goes on and says, does any of this sound secure to you? It seems to defeat the purpose of the whole exercise, which is to protect identities, capture terrorists, bear down on benefit fraud, and stop illegal immigration. But of course, none of these will be ameliorated by the possession of an ID card, which nobody will be required to carry with them. As one perplexed campaigner said after the publication of the new costings, quote, the government now appears to have jumped the primary pretext for the scheme, so what is it for? Now that's the question. What is it for? They lie. They lie continually. And therefore, the question mark is, you know, what is this for? Now, just in that line, we'll go on and do that. I mean, just to give you an idea, here's another paper, and we'll come back to this article. It says, Thursday, May the 8th, headline news, foreign criminals work at the airports unchecked. So it says, the thousands of foreigners are being allowed to work in high-security parts of Britain's airports without passing proper criminal record checks. It was disclosed last night. Despite warnings that terrorists would try to recruit people working airside in terminals with direct access to aircrafts and baggage, no attempt has been made to check whether foreign workers have committed any offence abroad. Now, if you only have to go down to Heathrow and you hardly see a white face on the officials that are there, and most of them are Pakistani and Muslim, and so you say, well, it's a prime recruiting ground. And yet another article here is from Friday, May the 9th. It says ministers knew that the airport workers were not checked. It says ministers have known for 5 years that checks on foreigners working in airports did not cover overseas criminal records. For 5 years they've known that, and yet they'll push the ID card and they'll ignore that. So we come back to the question that it says here. It says, is this... A perplexed campaigner said the publication of the new costings, quote, the government now appears to have junked the primary pretext of the scheme, so what is it for? And the answer, he goes on to say, has nothing to do with security any more than the presence of CCTV cameras everywhere has anything to do with stopping crime. It's nothing to do with that. As even senior police officers now concede, it is about political control. Now, when you see what is prophesied and what is, what we foresee into the future, you see that this is prophesied, that there is going to be political control. It is a beast that stamps the residue with his feet. And although it appears benign at the moment there is a reaction against many of these things, then you will see the imposition and the control and the things that are in place at the present time within us as societies and countries will then be put into use just the same way as they're using terrorism legislation to catch fishermen. They will use the same kind of legislation to do whatever they wish. And we have don't be hoodwinked by this nonsense that comes out of government sources. It says here, he says it's about political control. The state wants to know where you are, and those who run it have always believed it has a right to know, but have usually been beaten back by Parliament. Now, where did those parliamentary laws come from? Where did the idea that, no, you don't have an ID card here in the UK come from? Well, turn over with me, if you would, to 1 Chronicles 21. First Chronicles 21. I doubt if the governmental ministers have read this in the majority of cases. But the governmental ministers of yesteryear, who put together the Constitution of the United States and who actually formulated the laws within our country, knew these things. They did understand and they did read these scriptures. And they knew exactly what happened regarding David, which is mentioned here in 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. And Satan, the enemy, stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel, to know what kind of a force that he had. And David said to Joab and to the rulers of his people, "Go, number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan, and bring me the number of them to me, that I may know it." And Joab answered and said, "The Eternal make his people 100 times so many more than they be. But my lord the king, are they not all my lord's servants? Why then does my lord require this thing? Why will he be cause of a trespass to Israel?" Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Wherefore Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem. Now, why was it a trespass against Israel? Well, again, go back to the thing with Nimrod. What was he? He was a benefactor. And what did he do? He was the benefactor before the Eternal. And who was the one who was the source of strength for Israel? Was it an army? Ridiculous. Joab knew that. Joab was the head of the army, and even he was not righteous by any stretch. But even he could see, look, this is wrong. This is wrong because you're trying to put your faith in something which is not godly, which is not God. And the faith of the nation has got to remain in God. It's got to be on a godly basis. So if you go down a route which is trying to go in another direction, which is what David was doing, he was numbering Israel. He was trying to see what kind of force that he had available to him to protect himself. But his protection was not from that source at all. It was from God. And that is what Job recognized. Now here, what are we doing? Well, the government is trying to protect itself. It's trying to have control. Now if that government was righteous, if it was under God, if it was going along the lines which the Constitution specifies in the United States, which the historical basis of the legislation within the United Kingdom is founded upon, from Magna Carta and even before, all the way through, then they would recognize, no, there is somebody over the government, and that one over the government is God himself. And therefore, there is a certain responsibility that the government has towards God, before God. And when that is not there, they are sinning. They are going against God. And in the direction in which they are going in this particular case, it says here, the state wants to know where you are, and those who run it have always believed it has a right to know, but have usually been beaten back by Parliament, by the people in Parliament that were God-fearing. In other words, information technology has provided the wherewithal for these details to be captured, so the government has seized its chance. That's basically what has happened. That is why you're going down the ID scheme. It says, given the gradual removal of the security walls around the proposed ID database, it's clear that this scheme has nothing to do with protecting our identities. It's about setting up a glorified population register to keep track of us. Those who think the government will scrap the ID card are mistaken, since its main purpose is to establish a population database. This is also why it will eventually be compulsory to join in. So there are some people with a certain amount of sense, but again, they do not see the fundamental problems because they do not approach it from a godly perspective. Now, what we are finding, however, is that there are problems. We do find a certain number of problems within society, and the government is having to do a rethink in many many cases. There's one here. This is from Telegraph on Tuesday, May the 13th. It says, small is beautiful when it comes to the countryside. It says, it's typical of our money-obsessed government that it cannot understand why small things may be important. Ministers look at tiny post offices and shops, local libraries, villages, schools and district hospitals and see trifling anomalies that are not productive when measured by turnover. So they look at these things, they're looking at it from a monetary point of view. And I must admit, to all of you listening in the United States, I was horrified when my brother actually came across here from the United States after living there for a while, how his attitude towards money had changed. Now, this was some time ago. This was back in the 80s. I think it was 70s, 80s, something like that. 80s, I think it was. But his attitude towards money had changed. The dollar was everything. And it was just very different from what it was over here at that time. Today, however, we've gone down that same route. Unfortunately, their value only becomes apparent, this talking about these village schools and district hospitals and so on, only becomes apparent when they are dismantled. And the bonds that tie the people together begin to disappear. You see, there is a social problem within these things. They look at everything on the money basis, and when these things get pulled out, it says here that the bonds that bind the people together begin to disappear, and when you get poverty, alienation, youth crime, health inequalities, then you're suddenly talking the language of government, and the ministers are interested. And that really does kind of sum it up. And we are seeing, therefore, headlines like this. Estate agencies shut 150 branches a week. You know, they're shutting the branches because they can't sell the houses, and the houses that they have got on their books with their mortgages, people are going, they're going into negative equity, and they're walking away. And therefore, the bank that thinks they've got assets suddenly don't have assets. So the bank is now in trouble. It says another one here, it says we have less to spend than for 17 years. Basically, household bills continue to soar, the family's spare cash is eaten away. Another one here, these are all headlines now. House prices now falling year on year. Now, as I say, that's the reason why house prices falling is a problem. Although falling prices you think is a good thing, but not in the case of houses, because you've got a mortgage in there and you're paying interest on that mortgage all the time. That is what is paying the banks their money. And the people, you know, the banks have the money based on, and the actual pounds and dollars are being printed on the back of debt. The Federal Reserve is printing on the back of debt in the States, and the Bank of England doing the same over here. And we are eventually going to find that the collateral just isn't there. And basically it has resulted in an election, this is Saturday, May the 3rd, about a couple of weeks ago, which the headline said here, meltdown for Brown. In other words, it's Labour's worst poll showing for 40 years, as the local elections, not the governmental elections, these are local elections for councils, where they, in fact, they virtually went under. Okay, and the thing that is being neglected all the time in this, as I said, it is the foundation on the Constitution of the United States, the original meaning behind the Constitution, based on Scripture, based on the Judeo-Christian heritage that was there, and the legislation within the UK, the parliamentary legislation, again based on that Judeo-Christian heritage. And yet today, when we read the papers here in Saturday, May the 10th, last week, it says, Christians are open to ridicule now as the blasphemy laws are lifted. It says, Britain's ancient laws of blasphemy have been abolished by MPs. That has just recently happened in the last few days, quite frankly, or last week. A campaign to repeal the offences of blasphemy and blasphemous libel, which made it illegal to insult Christianity, was proposed in January by the Liberal Democrat, Evan Harris, and is supported by public figures, including the author Philip Pullman and the academic Richard Dawkins. And Richard Dawkins is an evangelical atheist. I say evangelical atheist because he's pushing it in an evangelical way. He's pushing atheism, anti-God. He's not just godless, he is anti-God. They claim that the little-used laws serve no useful purpose while allowing religious groups to appear to censor artists, and so on it goes. At the same time, another one, this is from Thursday, May the 15th, make RE optional for secondary pupils, say MP, that's religious education, is now an optional course, therefore they're not going to go ahead and be able to understand when are they ever going to even read any of the scriptures? They won't be. If there's no RE, if there's, the Christian religion is open, therefore, to open ridicule. I mean, the Muslim religion is also probably therefore open to ridicule, except for one thing: you get killed if you do it. That's basically what it is. You see these kind of short-term articles. Here's one from Saturday, May the 10th. Again, a week ago, it says, "The secret to a happy marriage is no children." Secret to a happy marriage is no children. Now, many parents would probably agree with that, however, but it is short-term view. It's ostrich-like. It, quite frankly, is unbridled selfishness. It may be that, yes, selfishly, you can go through life and you have no children, you don't have the worries, you don't have the heartache. But what do you have? You have nothing. You have no society. You have nothing whatsoever. And certainly, it is not the way that God intended us to live. Another one here. Pagan prisoners win their wand rites. Hundreds of pagan worshippers locked up in jail have been given the right to take twigs into their cells to use as magic wands. That's been a right now established to pagans. This ruling, which also allows hoodless robes and rune stones, was made to allow 300 or so pagans currently serving sentences to have the same rights as other religions, and the permission of the use of religious artifacts was agreed after consultation with the pagan federation on what equipment was needed. Well, let's just in that line, let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7, and just remind ourselves of something. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, you see again, you're looking at benefactors. These almost appear to be beneficiaries. They're helping these poor pagans who need whatever it is, their wands. But in chapter 7 verse 1 it says, "When the Eternal your God bring you in the land where you go to possess it, and have cast out many nations before you, the Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you," and they had these pagan practices within them, they had exactly that, "then when the Eternal your God should deliver them before you, you will smite them and utterly destroy them. You will make no covenant with them. You will not show mercy to them. You will not make marriages with them. For they will turn away your son from following me, that they serve other gods, and the anger of the Eternal will be kindled against you. But you shall deal with them, thus shall you deal with them," verse 5, "you shall destroy their altars, break down their images, cut down their groves, burn their graven images with fire, and destroy their wands." You know, you can add that quite easily, and it fits right into that particular passage of Scripture. We should not be going down the route that we are going at the moment, and certainly allowing these pagan practices. It's interesting, however, that what we see, when we look at the Depression, we see so many of these things. We see the Christian culture being eroded on every side, abortions and so on. I mean, here's another one. It says, "Rapist who killed girl of 14, quote, had the human right to housing." He says, "A convicted rapist sexually assaulted and murdered a teenage girl after a counsellor was told he could not be evicted because he would breach his human rights." So in other words, the human rights came before the right of, well, basically he was on the sex offenders register, subject to official checks, but he was able to move into a city of his choosing where his neighbours did not know his past, and was able to go ahead and go on there and actually murder a girl. And quite frankly, his right to life now is gone. But of course they won't do that. They'll lock him up in jail at the church. I think the current rate is what? 40,000 a year, is it? Something like that. Some astronomic amount a year per person. But you see, what we're looking at, when we look at the Depression, we look at the things that are going on today, you look at the economic situation that we have today, and you look at the way the country is sliding away from the Judeo-Christian heritage, and you're looking at the way in which the control is coming into our countries, which is an authoritarian control. It is the same kind of Gentile mindset of control. Just think about this. When the Depression occurred back in the 30s, there were 25% of whites out of work. 25% of the white population in America was out of work. And there wasn't the benefit system that there is today in America. 80% of blacks at that time were also out of work in the Depression, because they were, in general, they tended to have more menial jobs, and therefore they were the first to go. Now, if you imagine that the Judeo-Christian heritage was there, and that people were disciplined, they were disciplined to think along a somewhat godly line. It's not, they weren't thinking in a converted way, but they were conditioned to think along a somewhat godly line based on the constitution, based on the various legislation that had been put in by God-fearing men, if not converted men. They weren't converted. And they put up with things. People did tend to put up with things at that time. They put up with the fact, you know, the idea that they go out and cause a civil unrest and riots and, you know, kill policemen and whatever else that they would do. It was not the result, it was not the attitude of mind at that time. But when we're looking at now, we're looking at a very, very different culture. A culture where these rules, where these laws, I mean, here's another one, quick fix culture is dumbing down our education, saying leading head, and basically saying education is being undermined by a quick fix culture, a leading headmaster claimed yesterday. And school tests have been made easier to ensure, and on it goes. Another one, this is the Sex in the City lass, she says, I'm just a woman in love with a woman, and homosexuality is accepted. Women should have abortions on demand, another one. Repeat abortions, another one. Repeat abortions rise to record levels where they have more than one abortion. It's a society that is under attack, and what is under attack is this Judeo-Christian heritage of God's law. And therefore what you then have is you then have the membership of that society and civilization who will not react in the way that they did during the Depression. Therefore they're handling it differently. They're therefore stealing from the majority with inflation. The value of money will drop. Therefore, they can keep some semblance of order. And in addition to that, the technology is then given to them to have this oppressive regime, which is a Babylonian-like regime. And it's from that that we're going to see eventually slide across into Babylon the Great, which will be a European theatre, which will be imposed on our countries, that will eventually be the ones that will take control and impose this beast-like rule over our nations. And again, we're looking for that just for a short period of time until finally Christ returns and just sorts the whole stinking mess out. But I think you'll find that the sermon today from Mr. Armstrong will then give this sorting the whole mess out and how our part, what part we have to play within it right now. And I hope that the news analysis, therefore, will help you to contrast with what's in the newspaper in the last 2 weeks with this new civilization that is coming.